The town hall smelled of wet wool and coal dust, a combination that Wren Holloway associated with winter funerals and municipal indifference. It was a large, high-ceilinged room on the ground floor of the council building, painted in colors that had once been cheerful, but had faded to a sickly, peeling yellow under the glare of gaslight. The air was thick with the murmur of 200 people, the entire town. It seemed pressed into wooden benches that groaned under the weight. Wren stood at the front, behind a lectern of dark, varnished oak, and felt the eyes of the community pressing against her skin like physical touches. Heavy, suffocating. She had arrived early, before the bells had finished their noon toll, to set the ledger on the lectern. It sat there now, a massive red leather tome that looked absurdly out of place among the council minutes and rate books. It was a book of sins, bound in calfskin. Her father's handwriting filled its pages, neat and unyielding, a testament to 20 years of careful, calculated theft. Silas stood to her left, near the door. He had dressed for the occasion in his Sunday Besta charcoal suit that fit him poorly across the shoulders, a cravat tied too tightly. He looked uncomfortable, his jaw set in a hard line, his hands clasped behind his back to hide their trembling. He had not spoken to her since they left the funeral home. He had simply waited in the carriage, staring out the window at the passing gray streets, and when she had asked him if he was ready, he had only shaken his head and muttered something about necessary evils. Now he was watching the crowd with a predatory intensity, scanning for allies, for threats, for any sign of betrayal. Wren knew he was looking for her. He was looking for the moment she would fold, the moment she would remember that he was her uncle, that he had raised her when her mother died, that he had kept the lights on when the business failed. He was waiting for her to choose blood over truth. But Wren had already chosen. She adjusted the microphone, though it was not a microphone, merely a speaking trumpet of brass, polished to a shine that matched the banister she had refused to polish for a week. She leaned into it. The acoustics of the hall caught her voice and amplified it, sending it rolling out over the audience like a stone dropped into a well. "Mr. Chairman," she said, her voice was steady. It surprised her. She had expected it to shake, to crack under the weight of the room, but it was clear, precise, and cold. "I believe we are in order. The notice was posted. The agenda is clear." The chairman, a portly man named Mr. Henderson who smelled of brandy and mint, adjusted his spectacles and peered down at her from the dais. He looked uneasy. He had not wanted this meeting. He had tried to dissuade her, suggesting that private discussions would be more appropriate, that the town did not need to be disturbed by such unpleasant matters. But Wren had cited the bylaws. She had quoted Section 4, Paragraph 2, "Any shareholder may call for a special assembly to review matters of fiscal irregularity." She had used her father's own legalistic language against him. "Miss Holloway," Henderson said, his voice booming, "are you certain you wish to proceed? This is a serious matter. We have farmers and merchants here. Families, perhaps." "I am certain," Wren said. She opened the ledger. The sound of the leather cover cracking was loud in the sudden silence. 200 heads turned, 200 pairs of eyes fixed on the red book. "For the past 3 weeks," Wren began, "I have been reviewing the records of Holloway and Son. As you know, my father, Elias Holloway, founded this business in 1874. He built it on a promise that the dead would be treated with dignity and that the living would be told the truth. Today, I intend to honor that promise." She paused, she looked at Silas. He was staring at her, his green eyes wide, his face drained of color. He shook his head slightly, a desperate, silent plea. "Stop," his eyes said, "please, stop." Wren turned her gaze from the window. She laid her fingers upon the ledger's red leather cover, resting there until the ink dried. "In 1882, she said, "the business was nearly bankrupt. My father was in debt. The town was poor. The timber mill had closed, and with it, the wages of half the men in Oak Haven. My father faced a choice. He could let the business fail and lose the home, the legacy, the livelihood of his family, or he could find another source of income." She flipped a page, then another. The sound was rhythmic, deliberate, like a heartbeat. "He chose the latter. He entered into an agreement with Dr. Aris Thorne of the Birmingham Medical School. An agreement that allowed Holloway and Son to sell the bodies of our deceased townspeople to the university for anatomical study." A murmur rippled through the crowd. It started as a low hum and grew into a roar. Ren waited for it to subside, her hand resting on the open page. She could feel the vibration of the voices through the wood of the lectern. "Dr. Thorne provided a manifest," Ren continued, her voice rising to compete with the noise. "A list of 47 names, 47 people we buried, 47 people who were cremated, or so we were told." She looked up. She scanned the faces in the front rows. She saw Mrs. Gable sitting next to her neighbor, her face pale, her hands clutching a handkerchief. She saw Mr. Mercer, Thomas's son, looking confused, his brow furrowed. She saw Maeve Collins sitting alone in the third row, her blue eyes fixed on Ren with a terrifying calm. "Did you know?" Ren asked. She did not direct the question to anyone in particular. It hung in the air, a challenge. "Did you know that when you paid for the standard cremation, when you paid for the urn, when you paid for the lilies and the service and the prayer, that none of it happened? Did you know that your loved ones were not returned to you, that they were taken away, that they were dissected?" The silence that followed was absolute. It was the silence of shock, of betrayal, of a world tilting on its axis. Silas stepped forward. He had broken ranks. He was moving towards the front of the room, his hands raised in a placating gesture. "Ladies and gentlemen," he called out. His voice was loud, defensive, but it lacked its usual confidence. "There has been a misunderstanding. This is a matter of private business. Miss Holloway is young, and she is grieving, and she does not understand the complexities." "I understand perfectly," Ren said. She did not raise her voice. She did not need to. The brass speaking trumpet carried her words to the back of the hall. "I understand that my father sold our dead. I understand that my uncle has been managing the profits for 20 years. I understand that we have been lying to this town, to you, to yourselves, for 2 decades. She pointed to the ledger. "Every name in this book is a lie, every fee charged is a theft, and every urn sitting on your mantelpiece is empty, or filled with ash from the timber mill." A scream tore through the room. It was Mrs. Gable. She stood up, her chair scraping against the floor, her face contorted in anguish. "My Arthur," she cried. "Where is my Arthur? Where is he?" No one answered. No one could. Ren felt a pang of sympathy, sharp and sudden, but she pushed it aside. Sympathy was a luxury she could not afford. Not now. Not when the truth was finally, brutally on the table. "He is in Birmingham," Ren said. "Or Sheffield or Manchester. We do not know. The records do not specify. All we know is that he is not here, and neither are the others." She looked at Silas. He had stopped moving. He was standing in the aisle, surrounded by the angry mob, his face a mask of horror. He looked small, frail. The giant who had terrified her in the archive room was gone, replaced by a frightened old man who had made a terrible mistake and hoped no one would notice. "You helped him," Ren said. "It was not a question." Silas opened his mouth, but no sound came out. He looked at the crowd, searching for support, for mercy, for anything. But there was nothing, only judgment. "I did what I had to do," he whispered. But the acoustics of the hall caught it, and the whisper became a shout. "I did what I had to do to keep us afloat." "And who decided that?" Ren asked. "Who decided that our dead were worth more than our living? Who decided that their dignity was a commodity to be traded?" Silas had no answer. He slumped against the wall, sliding down until he was sitting on the floor, his head in his hands. Ren turned back to the crowd. She closed the ledger. The snap of the cover was final. "I have copied the manifest," she said. "I have sent copies to the authorities in Birmingham, to the police, to the press. This secret is no longer ours to keep. It belongs to the truth now." She stepped back from the lectern. She did not look at Silas. She did not look at Mrs. Gable. She looked at the door. "I am resigning from Holloway and Son," she said. "Effective immediately, the business will be closed. The assets will be liquidated to repay the families who were cheated. As for me." She paused. She felt light, lighter than she had felt in years. The weight of the ledger was gone. The weight of the secret was gone. All that remained was the future, blank and terrifying, and hers. "As for me," she said, "I will find a way to make it right." She turned and walked out of Holloway Funeral Home. She did not look back. She walked through the crowded room, past the shocked faces, past the weeping widows, past the angry men, and out into the gray afternoon light. The air outside was cold and clean. It smelled of rain and river mud. It smelled of nothing at all. Wren Holloway stood on the steps of the town hall and took a deep breath. She listened to the sounds of the town, the horses clattering on the cobblestones, the distant cry of a street vendor, the wind rustling through the bare branches of the elm trees. It was a noisy world, a messy world, a world that was broken and would probably stay broken. But it was honest. For the first time in her life, Wren Holloway was honest, and it was enough. Wren pulled her collar tight against the chill and shouldered past the gate. The gray morning swallowed the house whole, erasing the heavy history she had carried within its walls until nothing remained but the damp air and the road ahead.